This is 89.1 WEMU, and I'm David Fair. And on the first Friday of each month, we take occasion to discuss a topic of environmental pertinence to our state, our county, and to our hometown. Over the past many years, there's been increasing conversation within the business world about energy costs and energy impact. Right here in our own backyard, University of Michigan professor Andy Hoffman authored a book in 2008 entitled Climate Change, What's Your Business Strategy? Well, today we're going to explore some of the business strategy in place now and being developed for the future. Lisa Wozniak is Executive Director of the Michigan League of Conservation Voters and co-host of WEMU's First Friday Focus on the Environment. And welcome back. Always good to see you.
Thank you, David. It's always great to be here. And this month, our guest is Laura Sherman, President of the Michigan Energy Innovation Business Council. Welcome to the show, Laura.
Yes, welcome indeed.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So, Laura, tell us a little bit about the Energy Innovation Business Council.
Yeah, so EIBC was founded in 2013. We are a membership organization of advanced energy companies from all across the sector who are doing business in Michigan. And we started with 13 companies, and we're now up to 120. And these are everything from wind installers, solar developers, battery manufacturers, electric vehicle companies, really runs the whole gamut across any kind of advanced energy technology that's not a fossil fuel and that's moving us towards an energy future.
It sounds like there is a growing interest in joining a clean energy future and developing the technologies of the future. We've seen, obviously, an amazing growth over a short period of time. What role do businesses play today in advancing the clean energy future?
First and foremost, our companies are providing cost-competitive clean energy that folks want to use and want to purchase. It's no longer looking into the future where these things will be at cost parity. We're there. We're at cost parity. And there's also, we have companies that are members and others that we're working with that want to buy renewable energy. So businesses are really driving demand for renewables now. We've seen this recently in Michigan with a number of the big companies like GM, Ford, Switch, making announcements that they're going to move to renewables and then joining programs to purchase renewables.
So how does Michigan stack up in terms of clean energy businesses and jobs in the Great Lakes region?
Michigan is actually leading the way. We're fifth in the country and first in the Midwest in terms of clean energy jobs. We have 126,000 jobs in this sort of advanced energy sector. It also represents 4% growth rate over last year, which is 2.5 times higher than the rate of job growth in other sectors.
You touched on this in the beginning, Laura. Washtenaw County and Southeast Michigan are a primary hub for the advancement of vehicle technology that can change our transportation future and forge a stronger manufacturing and energy sector future. How do you see the near and longer term future playing out with electric vehicles?
We're really moving towards a mobility future that's more automated, more connected, more shared, and all of that is going to happen on an electrified platform. It just makes more sense from an engineering and technology standpoint. And so I think Michigan automakers are at a key inflection point where they're seeing much higher demand for electric vehicles, for automated vehicles, and we're trying to help set the policy and the platform for them to be able to sell them and for consumers to buy them in Michigan as well.
First Friday Focus on the Environment continues on 89.1 WEMU. My co-host is Lisa Wozniak and the Michigan League of Conservation Voters. And today we're talking with Laura Sherman. She is the president of the Michigan Energy Innovation Business Council.
Laura, staying on that track for a minute on the electric vehicles, will we continue to need government subsidies or credits to move to a place where electric vehicles are affordable to most people and represent a primary mode of individual transportation?
You know, in the short term, those kind of tax credits have been really helpful to getting folks excited about electric vehicles. But, you know, we've seen recently there's a lot of movement from other sectors, from the private industry and from utilities towards supporting electric vehicles. So recently, Consumers Energy had their electric vehicle pilot program approved, and DTE's is in the works. And EIBC has been helping to advance those and make sure that they really are using ratepayer dollars in the best way to advance infrastructure. And I think there's some key needs on infrastructure in Michigan. We're using those dollars now from utilities and from businesses, really set the table for the infrastructure, and then I think we're getting to a place where there's going to be interest from private companies and the ability to have the market take control there. So I think we're moving in that direction.
You mentioned policy, though, and when politics get involved, things can go right off the tracks. What are the barriers to more clean energy generation and renewable projects in Michigan from a policy standpoint?
We're working on a lot of different policies, and that's both at the legislature and in the regulatory world, to make sure that we're valuing renewable energy correctly, that we're creating the right competitive markets so that companies can compete and provide the lowest cost resources. So I think there's a number of things there. And we're also, I think your listeners may have heard of some of the local opposition in some areas to the siting of projects. And I think the companies are coming together to understand the benefits of education and community, real community engagement, to locate these projects in places where they're wanted and where the communities see the revenue and tax benefits and benefits to their local communities from the project.
Michigan has two major public utilities, DTE and Consumers Energy. And so how do we make sure that those utilities are planning as well as they can and should be? We had the polar vortex happen, right? I mean, that really, I think, shook a lot of people in terms of the energy issue. How do we make sure we keep, you know, energy available to people, but also make that really needed switch to the clean energy?
The utilities and their regulators, which is the Michigan Public Service Commission, are really understanding the need to plan ahead and to lay out long-term plans so that we're taking advantage of the most cost-effective forms of energy, which are absolutely renewables and energy efficiency and demand response. The 2016 energy legislation in Michigan established a new planning process, which requires the utilities basically to set forward what they think they're going to do in 5 years, in 10 years, in 15 years. And so both of the major investor-owned utilities, Consumers Energy and DTE Energy, are working on those right now. In fact, I think it's important to point out Consumers Energy in their IRP, which is almost done now, they're proposing 5,000 megawatts of solar over the next upcoming decades. The utilities are also undergoing longer-term plans for how they deal with the sort of smaller distribution lines that come into your homes and where they need to do upgrades and where they need to have more data and information so that they really know how they can integrate all of that new distributed energy.
Once again, this is 89.1 WEMU, and our conversation with Laura Sherman, the president of the Michigan Energy Innovation Business Council, continues on First Friday Focus on the Environment. While the marketplace is taking the utilities down the path of more renewable sources of energy, it's also lobbying on some fronts to ensure it maintains control of the grid, while in some cases trying to limit what you spoke about, individual and community efforts for solar and renewables, particularly rooftop. Is it a strategy that can work? Can they have it both ways?
Well, that's a tough question. I think the key is that we really need to value solar energy and other distributed forms of energy fully, and we need to make sure that they are taking into account all the value that distributed generation brings to the grid and to ratepayers and to the people who are generating it. So it's a complicated thing to go through, but the 2016 legislation set out a process, and we think there's some improvements that can be made. Really, to take into account, you know, if you're producing solar on your house, it's going directly to your neighbor, so there's a lot less that's lost. There's a lot fewer distribution costs. There's obviously the benefit of not needing to build new resources elsewhere because you're getting your power from your neighbor. I think that if it's fairly valued, there can really be benefits to the whole grid, to society as a whole, and then also to ratepayers.
So, Laura, a lot of times we hear the utilities in particular are talking about grid security. Is there a path to not only allowing but encouraging small energy producers, the producers that can sell their power to the utilities during peak energy usage, and at the same time maintain that integrity?
Well, there's a lot going on right now that can help with that, actually. I think there's some interesting bills that have been introduced recently on microgrids. And there's more that can be done, too. These can be a whole neighborhood, for example, where there's a risk that you lose power a lot or that you're sort of at the end of the grid, you can create your own microgrid where you're supporting the grid with backup power, you're producing your own power if the grid goes down, and that sort of creates much more additional resilience and grid support that way. There's also increasingly the cost of storage are coming down dramatically, and so we have a lot of companies now that are interested in pairing storage with both with rooftop solar, as you may have heard about, but also with utility scale solar in big wind farms, so that you create the ability to basically have a baseload power system from a variable system like wind and solar that aren't always producing power, but if you have that storage, you have the backup, and that adds much more resiliency and reliability onto the grid, too.
Laura Sherman, thank you so much for the time today. I appreciate you sharing your expertise with us.
Thank you. It's been fun.
Laura is president of the Michigan Energy Innovation Business Council and our guest on First Friday Focus on the Environment. My co-host for this monthly get-together is Lisa Wozniak. And Lisa, we'll see you on June 7th.
Look forward to it, David. Thank you.
I'm David Fair, and this is 89.1 WEMU-FM and WEMU-HD1 Ypsilanti.